We're going to listen back to an interview with Edwin Newman, the former NBC News correspondent, anchor, and critic. He died of pneumonia last month at age 91, but his death wasn't announced until yesterday to give his family time to quietly grieve. Newman was also well known for his books and newspaper columns in which he did his best to defend the English language against what he perceived as pomposity, banality, grammatical offenses, and other abuses. I spoke with him in 1988, after the publication of his book, I Must Say, which collected the syndicated columns he'd written after retiring from NBC in 1984. He told me that his interest in language was encouraged when he was young.
A teacher told me, in fact, it was in junior high school, that I wrote well, and I believed her, which had a considerable effect on my life.
Were you already, when you were young, interested in uses and abuses of the English language? And did you ever correct friends who misspoke?
Yes, I did. Not always to the general delight of those I corrected, I must say. I also had to be careful at home about correcting anybody. For one thing, my parents did not have anything like the advantages that I did. Neither of them so much as graduated from high school. So it was necessary to be sensible about it, not to be overbearing about it, which I think is good advice for anyone, even today.
Now, you've written several best-selling books about our language, and I'd like to know how language and protecting the language became a serious interest of yours.
It had been a serious interest of mine for a very long time, as someone in the news business, because, after all, language is the instrument with which we work. Well, language and pictures, but certainly when I began, more language than pictures. And I thought that it was the business of anybody in the news business to, it was the part of anybody in the news business to examine what he was told or what she was told, and you cannot do that. You cannot examine what you're being told and judge its veracity unless you understand language, and not particularly unless you understand when language is being used in an attempt to mislead you. I took that very seriously. That was a subject that I thought I had something to say about.
Now, I've read that you used to keep files of bad writing that you'd come across at work. is that right?
It is true. My editor, a woman named Jeanette Hopkins, said to me, just collect some envelopes, mark one with the name of a particular subject, sports, let's say, another one, news, another one, government language, and so on and so on, and collect clippings. I was amazed at how quickly the clippings piled up.
Did you keep these files hidden from your colleagues? I'd hate to think what would happen if one of your colleagues found their copy in your file.
I kept the files at home, but I did a lot of work on the book in the office, did a lot of writing in the office. But I was tactful. Tactful and careful about what I did. People used to kid me a great deal and tell me they didn't want to say anything in my presence, and they were very careful about what they were writing because they didn't want to wind up in one of my books or perhaps in one of the essays I was doing on the air. I did a number of essays on the air on the subject before even the first book came out, and I had written a good many articles, magazine articles, The Atlantic, Harper's, New York Times Magazine, and some others, on this subject, so that even before the books came out, people knew of my interest.
What was your reaction the first time you saw yourself on TV?
I was very pleased. Perhaps I shouldn't admit that, but I was pleased, and I thought, well, this is something I can do.
You were on television during several key historical moments. Didn't you have to anchor the special bulletins or the continuing coverage after the assassination of Martin Luther King and Robert Kennedy?
Yes, I did. I became the person at NBC for many years who dealt with emergencies, was called in when something usually dreadful of that kind had happened. And I began with the shooting of President Kennedy, I announced President Kennedy's death, but on the radio, and then went to Washington and did both radio and television. But when Martin Luther King Jr. was killed, yes, it seemed to me I was on the air for days. Same was true with Robert Kennedy, and then I did that again with George Wallace, did it again with the shooting of Ronald Reagan.
Let me ask you about the first time when you had to announce John Kennedy's assassination on the radio. When you're dealing with something tragic like that and you have to announce it, there are two considerations in how you're going to speak. One is basically uncontrollable. I mean, how do you feel and how is that going to, in spite of yourself, get expressed in your voice? And the other is, what kind of tone do you consciously want to strive for in your announcement of this terrible event? What tone of voice did you use when you announced Kennedy's assassination?
I have heard myself. I've heard recordings of myself announcing the president's death, and obviously my voice was grave and it was somber. And it was not necessary to put that on. That's how you felt. In fact, as you sat there dealing with this information, you couldn't help asking yourself, is this really happening? Then, because you are in the news business, you say to yourself, in effect, well, if this is really happening, I'm glad I'm the one they've chosen to deal with it. In a way, it's a mark of confidence, but also because you understand that you have to bring a certain degree of detachment to it. Now, not everybody can do that, and if not everybody can do that, that's easily understandable. But clearly, if you're a human being, you're going to be affected by it, and that will show in your voice. It seems to me you do not try for it.
Journalist Edwin Newman recorded in 1988. His death was announced yesterday. He was 91.